Welcome to ThoughtCast. I'm Jenny Atiyah. You've probably heard this before.
I believe in figuring out my own way to do things.
I believe in the power of numbers.
I believe in barbecue.
Well, I believe in friendliness.
I believe in mankind.
This I believe.
This I Believe is an earnest, heartfelt public radio series featuring the personal beliefs of a wide range of Americans, from Bill Gates to the boy next door. Its simple, affirmative essays are a small act of defiance, a declaration in the face of doubt and uncertainty. Jay Allison is the co-creator and curator of the series. His goal is to democratize media, to, in his own words, give voice to others and make public radio truly public. He's here with me now. Jay, welcome to ThoughtCast.
Glad to be here.
You've recently come out with a book, Jay, of some of the best This I Believe essays, and I was so hoping to find yours in there, but you've neither published nor broadcast it.
No, we're chicken-hearted about putting our own out there. All of us have written them. Everybody works on this project. And in the project started in the 1950s, and Edward R. Murrow and his team began this, ran it for 5 years every single day on the radio. As he said, a butcher or a baker would come forward, and ex-presidents and captains of industry. And that team, each felt they needed to take on the task to see how difficult it was for others, because we're asking people to tell us, you know, their most closely held convictions in 500 words. And if you think it's easy, you should try it, because it's a real trick. And we felt we all had to do it, and we all did, but we're not sharing them with anybody because I think at a profound level, it's not about us.
You said that these are about convictions, which is a different word from belief, or at least the way belief...
Well, I'm using some rough synonyms just because we use credo, personal philosophy. I mean, there are linguists out there who will be happy to bone pick this. But, you know, it's essentially about the principles that guide a life. And we don't really get too deeply into the subtle variations between belief or faith or conviction or... But they're the things each of us learn and that we cling to.
Speaking of an interesting word, I think that in your This I Believe essay, you talk about earlids.
In my introduction in the book, I may talk about that. I'm a radio guy most of my life. And I think one reason I keep coming back to it, I worked in the theater, I've worked in television, keep coming back to radio, and there are probably two reasons. One is that it's the publicness of it, which you talked about earlier, and the notion that that all our voices and stories are important, and that there is a context in which they can be shared, and that's public broadcasting, and that's my belief in public broadcasting. I expand on that. But the other thing is just this strange, ghostly power of the human voice to get inside you, because we're unprotected by earlids, and it can sneak past our defenses, and you can hear something in a person's breath, or the way their word catches in their throat, or you can hear their mind, you can hear their heart, and then all of a sudden that is also inside you, which is a remarkably subtly powerful phenomenon and not fully understood even, but it exists in radio, and it exists often when you least expect it. You can be surprised and ambushed by another and even changed a little bit. And this series, This I Believe, and a lot of the other work we do aspires to those kinds of moments.
Let's listen to one of the essays. This one is called There Is No Blame, There Is Only Love, and it's by Anne Karaczynski.
You don't expect your child to grow up to be a heroin addict. From the moment of her birth, you have hopes and dreams about the future, but they never include heroin addiction. That couldn't happen to your child, because addiction is the result of a bad environment, bad parenting. There's most definitely someone or something to blame. That's what I used to believe. But after failed rehab, in long periods of separation from my heroin-addicted daughter, after years of holding my breath, waiting for another relapse, I now believe there is no blame.
Jay, the story is like a confessional. Is it also a form of therapy?
This particular one or the whole This I Believe exercise?
Either.
Some more than others. Some people are very clear about what they believe. The principles they live by are not mysteries to them. Indeed, they're handles. And though for others, I would say, we sometimes our editorial relationship with the essayists, say the ones who submit to the project, and I should say, you know, anyone can submit to this project. 25,000 people have sent in essays. You go to thisibelieve.org and everything is there to explain what the deal is. But we have a review team that listens to them, and then we call people and say, look, your essay is caught our attention. And would you like to work on it with us? Sometimes there's a lot of work and sometimes there's a little bit. But as you start to dig into people's belief and ask them more about it and how they arrived at it and to get them to really explain it so lots of people can understand it, it does sometimes become therapeutic because they go, well, if you put it that way, I need to think more carefully about, you know, do I really want my kids to think I believe that, or do I want to model this, or did I get that from my parent? So sometimes it becomes immensely therapeutic. People, for the most part, really like the editorial process. I've got a great team. We really try to get to people's personal truth and have it sound like them, and at the same time be something that millions of people will be interested in. No small trick.
In many cases, it's therapeutic for the creator of the essay. Do you think it's also therapeutic for the listener?
Well, you know, it depends on the day and it depends on what you need to hear that day. There are essays that I'll speak personally, but I think it's true for many that on a given day, an essay can blow right by me and I won't maybe receive it. And 6 months later, I could hear the same essay. Maybe somebody has died in the meantime. Maybe there's been a failure that I have to reckon with. And the essay will carry an entirely different weight. I mean, you hear things as you need them and you receive them that way. And so each one of these essays, as I travel around the country with the book we've done, in every town, people come up to me and say, you know what my favorite is? And almost in every case, it's something different. Probably every essay has been spoken for as someone's favorite. You know, there are lots of conditions out there among all of us humans.
Who doesn't like these essays, Jay? What kind of person?
You mean doesn't like them generally? I think sometimes I'm amazed in a way that we exist at all in a Washington newsroom. I mean, I think it's a testament to NPR that these have aired in that context. I know there are those in that context that feel that they, I don't know what, are too soft, too earnest, too naive, too not journalism, not news. But you know, I'm not surprised at that. That makes sense. I mean, the attributes of a Washington newsroom are tough and skeptical and cynical even. And these essays are really quite the opposite. So, you know, the two cultures are different. I feel that it's important for this kind of work to be on in public broadcasting because it is the voice of citizens and does open the public airwave to the citizen voice. And I'm not interested in a public radio journalism which just hires so-called professionals to go out and tell us what's going on. I think we all should be involved.
You're listening to ThoughtCast. I'm Jenny Atiyah, and I'm speaking with Jay Allison, the independent broadcast journalist who has, let me tick these off, launched several successful public radio programs, won numerous distinguished awards, created WCAI, WNAN, and WZAI, three public radio stations here in Massachusetts, co-founded Transom.org and PRX, two organizations which help independent producers create and promote their work. And I should say here, full disclosure, that WCAI and WNAN have broadcast several of my ThoughtCast interviews, and I'm also a member of PRX. So thanks to you, Jay.
Oh, not at all. That's the point. Yeah, I mean, all of these things are in one way or another an attempt to encourage listeners and citizens to create the content that we all share. So for me, it's all about, in a way, sharing the gift I was given when public radio started and the opportunity to borrow a tape recorder and get out there and talk to people and share their stories. You know, I'd like to make sure everybody understands they have the same opportunity.
We should probably mention, Jay, that you live in Woods Hole, and that's on the Cape, which isn't exactly the center of the universe as far as media is concerned. I'm wondering if it's this isolation that's driven you to create all these projects.
I'm not sure it's what's driven me, but I like it as a context because it's a relatively uncomplicated place to live, which then leaves lots of quietude and even boredom, which is a great context to make things complicated and less boring. I think I tend to work better in that kind of an environment than I would say in a big city where it's already full of energy and content. And if I'm in a quiet place, it gives me a chance to mess it up.
Is radio for you an antidote to loneliness?
Well, I'm not lonely.
You've been described as lonely by certain people in the past.
There have been lonely times in my life, but I got three kids. I have a wife. I'm really not. I do feel maybe sometimes isolated. I have a kind of my nature is somewhat isolated. I'm a bit of an outsider, a bit of an observer since I was little, more of a listener than a talker, although now I'm sort of professionally doing a little bit of both. But I think it's not so much lonely as standing apart or standing aside. And it's a paradoxical thing of, on one hand, having some of that distance and also utterly interested in intimacy. So we were talking about therapy earlier. I mean, it's almost that, it's like the psychiatrist's role of intimacy with detachment. And I think that describes radio, too.
What about you?
That's probably about right. I would say that's right. I'm probably a weird combination of intimate and detached.
I'd like to back up here for a moment and try to set a little bit of a picture of your background. You grew up in a prosperous home in Delaware. Your father was a stockbroker, your mother a homemaker, and early on you were, and I'm quoting you here, a poor team player. How come?
How come? I'm not sure. I'm not very competitive. I don't mind competing against myself, trying to do things better. I'm big into accomplishment and leaving things, making things. But sort of two teams struggling against one another with the goal of winning is ultimately kind of an empty exercise for me. And I think I've chosen partially public service and public radio in a way that nobody is competing with us. I mean, there's so little money to be made. I've always felt like an interesting breed of person is attracted to something like public broadcasting, because unlike writing or painting or movies or any of the other arts, there's no pot of gold. There's no striking it rich. You are in it because you want to do good work. You want to help other people. You want to have a context which is, you know, sort of public service oriented, and that would describe me.
I think you're also, though, you seem to like the role of founder. Would you be uncomfortable, let's say, as an employee in a larger institution where you're not in control of things?
Yeah, I think I would be a bad employee. I grew up in the 60s and 70s in an anti-authoritarian era. I think I'm fundamentally still a little bit adolescent in my attitudes and don't like being told what to do. And yeah, I think I might be a liability as an employee. I also like starting things. It's the energy of the beginning is more, I think it fits me better than the energy of maintenance.
I am pursuing the subject of you here, Jay, because it's really quite interesting. Let me continue. In an article by Lauren Cowan for a Columbia College publication, she quotes you as saying, I'm a hypersocial, antisocial person, and I don't pretend to understand all that yet. Jay Allison, in what way are you a hypersocial, antisocial person?
Well, I think anybody who goes into radio must be in some way a combination of those things. I mean, think about it. You are, you're communicating at the most kind of intimate level. You are right in someone's ear, and they are in yours if you're talking to them. And yet you're absolutely disembodied. You're not there. You're in the air. So I think, I was talking to Terry Gross about this. You know, she interviews people not in person. She's always has them in another room. And it's partly, I think, that same... that same principle at work is that the detachment is part of the intimacy, and that she wants to be on the same turf that her listeners are, which is just listening. So we operate keenly with one sense, but all the others are cut off. And that quote said, "I don't really fully pretend to understand. I don't really understand." What draws a person to a medium where you're kind of so connected and so disconnected. But there you have it.
Jay, I'd like to play an excerpt of a personal essay of yours. It's about your relationship with guns. And as your first marriage starts to crumble, you decide that you want to go out and buy one. In part, you say, to remind yourself that you're a man. Let's listen.
I went shopping. Jittery and oddly excited before the rows of weapons under glass, inert, but full of power.
You would load it, close it, and fire it at whatever it was you needed to fire it at.
My children thought I was foolish and strange, especially when I showed them the target I had filled with bullet holes at the gun shop.
Oh, Dad.
What do you mean, oh, Dad?
That is weird, Dad.
Why do you think it's weird?
Because it's not you.
Jay, let me stop here and ask you, were your kids right? It's not you?
Well, I'm a public radio guy. A lot of people are. I grew up partly in a sort of outdoorsy context. My dad was a gun collector. I grew up sort of unafraid of guns. So, I have an ambivalent relationship with guns because I'm, I own them. I have handguns. But I'm aware of, I'm aware of the damage they can do.
Well, let's play a bit more.
My divorce became inevitable. At the same time, actual maniacs flew airplanes into buildings. And perhaps along with a tide of helpless people seeking defense against unpredictable forces, I bought a gun. Two, actually. Used Smith & Wesson handguns, a .357 Magnum nickel-plated revolver, and a 9mm high-capacity semi-automatic pistol. I practiced at the range. I found some comfort in harnessing explosive energy, in practicing accuracy. Sometimes, with the new language of anthrax, sarin, and dirty bombs on the TV in the background, I fired an empty gun at the walls of my bedroom.
It makes me sound strange.
Yeah? Why?
Well, you have the picture of this sort of isolated guy in a bedroom dry firing a revolver. I mean, come on, what do you mean? Why?
You're very vulnerable in this essay, but it seems to me that you're also very comfortable in that role, in that vulnerability, which to me is a bit of a contradiction.
I don't have a problem with vulnerability. I mean, I'm not embarrassed about that. I think people get into trouble mainly when they're trying to cover up their vulnerability.
But if you don't have a problem with being vulnerable, maybe you're not actually vulnerable when you're being vulnerable.
Well, I suppose that, yeah, I guess we could go round and round with that.
Meaning you're comfortable being vulnerable.
Partly with a piece like this, you're dealing with something that has occurred. so you can reckon with it and you can make peace with it and then you can admit it. And so the vulnerability, I am talking about a time of vulnerability, but I'm talking about it in the past tense and then okay with placing it there.
You're listening to ThoughtCast. I'm Jenny Atiyah, and I'm speaking with Jay Allison, the father, if not fairy godmother, of independent broadcast journalism. Jay, building community is one of your key goals. What's your sense of your success so far? For example, what kind of feedback are you getting from WCAI and WNAN listeners? Have you, in fact, built a community with these stations?
Well, I think we are a catalyst for community, but more than that, it's really a context to understand the community. It's where you are, where you live, the place you occupy. And I think a local public radio station has almost a venerable mission to be where it is.
Jay, I've noticed that you don't broadcast any classical music on your stations, which has in many ways always been a mainstay of public broadcasting. You don't broadcast that much music, period.
We don't. I think one bit of conventional programming wisdom that we adhere to is that we expect our audience to turn to us for kind of intelligent talk. I mean, we'll talk about music, and we carry programs that do and that play it and are illustrative of that music, but we don't do needle drop music shows.
But apparently, according to audience research, most public radio listeners don't want classical music anymore.
Yeah, I'm not too intimate with the debate on that, but it is true that in a lot of communities, when they've made the switch from classical to news and information, the stations have done much, much better as a result.
Now, why is that, do you think?
Well, public radio's strength right now is in news and information. I mean, that's what everything at the NPR level in Washington and at many local stations has been to gear up. Partly as other broadcasters and even newspapers abandon that terrain. I mean, NPR now is one of the only organizations which is increasing, say, international bureaus. Newspapers are pulling out like crazy. And it's kind of a frightening time in a way for journalism because, you know, how will we know what's going on? So I think people do look to public radio as one of the few places that still is generating its own reporting and has people on the ground and is sort of broadly interested in the world.
You're listening to ThoughtCast. I'm Jenny Atiyah, and I'm speaking with Jay Allison. Jay, do you think you should be broadcasting what people want to hear on your stations?
Well, what do you mean?
What do you think?
Well, it depends on which people and on which
public radio people.
You know, I think it's an interesting mix of trying to satisfy yourself and keep yourself from being bored and try to challenge yourself and keep content fresh and exciting to you, and that your role is to be a broadly interested person and curious and intellectually energetic and with a sense of humor and, aware and informed. And if something interests you and you are, you know, fully aware of every cliche in broadcasting and journalism and storytelling, and your listeners trust you to be a good agent of information for them.
Jay, as you know, public radio right now is in crisis mode. The audience has been flat across the country. Do you not think that there is pressure on stations and on, of course, NPR in general to increase their audience?
You know, my station director probably is rightfully concerned about the numbers. I'm concerned about telling stories in honest ways and making them as interesting and as illuminating as they can possibly be. And focus groups and quantifying metrics are of limited use to me because more people. I don't know what to do with it. I don't know. You can make one person happy and you'll make another person sad with some choice you make. And which person is it that you're going to listen to? I mean, finally, you have to listen to your gut in these things. And it's the only thing that's ever worked for me in 30 years. I got into public broadcasting when public radio started. And the only thing that's ever worked for me is to try to behave to some degree like an artist and to try to find truths and speak them and, you know, not to be too precious about it. But I feel like that's what people want. They want to hear something that's real, that's authentic, that's coming from a person. That's what radio is a personality. And if they sense that you're pandering or that you're trying to please them, they don't want to be your friend. I mean, you want to do something that's noble and important and decent and good, and then at least you'll feel good about it. And if nobody listens and nobody cares, well, so be it.
Jay, last question. As you know, NPR has been going through sort of a soul searching over the last several years. And one of the lessons that NPR has been forced to learn, apparently, is that it's not there for the producers. It's there for the people. You might like what you're doing, but that's not the point. It's for what the people like. How do you react to that?
Well, I don't know what to do with that lesson. I mean, what if what the people like is some sort of strange fetishistic behavior? I don't necessarily think that you have to always or in any way just pursue numbers as your goal. In that case, you could certainly, it's been proven, produce all kinds of trash and get lots of people to listen. Look, we know that some people like, conflict and argument. They like people being put down. They like mockery. They like screaming. So what? So what did they like that? I mean, someone will take care of that. What people aren't taking care of, I think, is the more kind of civil and civic side of life. And I feel no compunction about standing up to the very end and saying this is what I stand for. And if we talked about this, I believe, and say who doesn't like it. You know, the easiest thing to mock is sincerity. And I think the hardest thing to raise money for is, you know, civic good. But it doesn't mean we should give up.
Jay Allison, I've really appreciated this chance to talk with you. Thank you.
Oh, not at all.
You've been listening to the award-winning independent broadcast journalist Jay Allison on ThoughtCast. If you'd like to leave a comment, please go to our website at thoughtcast.org. I'm Jenny Atiyah. Thanks for joining us.